Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. Modifier is about how and why we change games to meet our needs, whatever those needs might be. The urge to improve and create are nearly universal and have a place in every hobby or skill. Role-playing games as we know them may only date back to like the late 60s or early 70s, but I think it's important to remember that drive has not only been part of the hobby from the beginning, but it's what branched us out in the first place. Since we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons today, I wanted to take a quick minute to share with you a book that I just finished reading about D&D and this modifier's spirit. It's Empire of Imagination by Michael Whitwer is both a history of D&D and a biography of Gary Gygax. It's a beautiful narrative about Gygax's life and how he came to create Dungeons & Dragons. And some of you already know this, but it was through modifying the tabletop war games that he loved to play that Gygax formed the first of what we now refer to as a role-playing game. Whitwer's book does a really nice job of breaking down that iterative process, all the steps that he took between playing Avalon Hill games and writing the first edition of D&D. And for anyone who's interested in picking up the book, which I highly recommend, it's not always a happy story, but I think it's a really good one. Something I've noticed is that there are mixed feelings in the games community about people that write hacks and mods of existing games, like maybe those designers don't really count. It's so important to me that we remember and celebrate where this hobby came from in the first place. A mod, a hack, a chain of changes that took us in a new, exciting direction. And I want to keep celebrating that here because it's so incredible to me. That mindset of, okay, but what if we did this is so precious and essential, and it doesn't matter how big or small a step you take. You took a step towards something new, and that is amazing. Anyway, definitely grab that book if you're into learning more about the hobby or Gygax or D&D. I opted for the audiobook, and the narration is really well done. Well, heroes, I've been threatening it for weeks, but the time has finally come. Modifier got a lawyer. We talked a few episodes back about the Open Gaming License and System Reference Document for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Nolan and Suzanne from Roll20 talked with me about the basics and what it means for them as an online gaming platform, but like a lot of the conversations around the OGL and the SRD, the best we could offer on a lot of fronts was ask a lawyer. So we did just that. You guys sent in your questions about the license, and I sat down with friend of the network and actual lawyer Pranks Paul to see what we could answer. I'm afraid that some things are still best left to a personal consultation with a lawyer who can assess your unique situation, but we give you some information on how to make that happen too. Let's get right to it. Joining me on the show today is friend of One Shot, lawyer Pranks.
There we go. That's perfect. I am a friend of One Shot and I am a lawyer. Let's say that.
Those are both things that are true.
Those are things that are true. Those are things that I'm comfortable saying to the internet.
Cool. So why don't you introduce yourself briefly?
Perfect. Okay, so I am, like Meg said, a friend of One Shot. I'm a friend of James and Kat and them, and I'm also a lawyer. I'm a certified lawyer. I was sworn in 2014 in Illinois. So I'm a relatively new attorney. I do all kinds of law things. and on that note, I should make the point that nothing I say here constitutes legal advice. Nothing I say creates an attorney-client relationship. This is basically my opinion of how the OGL works. And as I'm sure Meg will be sure to clarify, anytime you have a question that seems like it's, you know, a fact pattern or a situation that applies to only you, you should definitely just go talk to your own lawyer. I enjoy long walks on the beach and not being sued by people for ethics breaches. So, yeah, that's basically me.
Cool. I think you might have at least that last one in common with a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
well, I don't know. There's a lot of weird people out there, Meg.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you never know. So I guess since you mentioned it, if listeners out there would like to pursue some of these questions with a lawyer on their own time outside of this podcast, which I imagine many of them will do.
And should do.
What sort of lawyer should they be looking for? What should they keep in mind when seeking out these questions in a real legally binding way?
Yeah. No matter what state you live in, there is a bar association, which is sort of a branch of that particular state's American Bar Association. Sometimes they are a part of it, sometimes they're independent. Anyway, they often have legal hotlines for these sorts of things, wherein there are people who use the phones and I was going to say man the phones, and then I was like, that's super sexist. And then I was going to say person, and then that sounded a little twee. There are people who work the phones, and they will be able to direct you to a specific type of lawyer. I would say an intellectual property lawyer is probably what you want to be going for here.
Cool.
I'd say, like, create, go out there and do things and make things, because it's important that you, like, sort of have something on paper so you can kind of, like, get a sense of what it is you want to do. The last thing that you want to do is be scared of putting anything to pen right now. Like, that's not the point of copyright. But if you find yourself getting into something that seems kind of technical and you're not sure what side of the law you're on, you should always just consult a lawyer. A lot of times lawyers will give you an estimate before you talk to them, and a lot of times
Cool.
they'll tell you, well, okay, just off the top of my head, this is this and that is that. And in a nutshell, what I would say is there are lots of resources that are Googleable about what kind of lawyer you should hire, and the kind of lawyer you're looking for is an intellectual property lawyer. So that's
Nice.
simple.
And I like that you brought up the that they'll give you estimates and things like that too. That was my follow-up, is just how much is this going to run me, having never employed a lawyer for any reason in my life yet.
Right. So
That's
the
terrifying.
hotline itself is almost like they're free,
Cool.
almost always. And oftentimes you should ask the hotline, like, is there a consultation fee and those sorts of things. And lawyers ethically should be telling you before they charge you. So that's true in the state of Illinois, but I understand it can be very, very scary for lay people to have to talk to a lawyer at all.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully we'll get enough, like, through the actual agreement that you guys can understand it and you guys can get a better sense of what is okay and what is not okay, and you won't have to do this at all.
Nice.
But that being said, if there's anything in this that, like, super confuses you, or I mean, it is a real technical legal document. It has legal force. So just make sure, this is the most important thing, make sure you spend some time trying to understand it before you consult a lawyer, before you start putting stuff out there. As a lawyer, the most important advice I would give anyone is read the contracts that you're being asked to sign. Read the licenses that you're going to try to use. Just make an effort to do that, and definitely make sure you read all the system reference documents that WOTC has given you before you do anything. I think that's like a preliminary step. Before you consult a lawyer, before you do anything like that, if you have an idea in the back of your head, just make sure you read everything. Read everything that's on the page, and we're going to go through, like Meg said, all of the SRD, or not the SRD. God, that would take forever. All of the OGL
Yeah.
together now. I'll say that again so that you don't all of the OGL now, so that that won't be as confusing, hopefully, for people.
Yeah, so this document that we talked about a few episodes ago, when we were when I was talking to Nolan and Suzanne from Roll20, is nearly 400 pages of information, but the legal portion of it is just the first two pages.
That
So
is only two pages, yeah.
yeah,
And for the
it's
record, that I've listened to that, I've listened to your shows, but that one in particular, Nolan did a really good job of sort of explaining what people should do and, like, what the issues are. Like, that was a very, I don't know if
yeah.
Nolan is a lawyer, but he did a good job. I just wanted to say
Cool.
that.
I think if I recall correctly, Nolan is married to a lawyer. So,
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
No, he was very good. So that is something. It's just two pages. I even read it and sort of made sense out of it, parts of
Good.
it anyway. So it's a
So I think
thing
we're
that you
done
can
here
do.
then, right?
Yep. Everybody go home.
Okay.
That's it. The rest of it being, the SRD, which is the fun part, which is the stuff that honestly, the folks who want to be playing in the sandbox, this is the kind of content that you're reading on a regular basis anyway. So 400 pages is nothing.
Exactly. And look, it's a PDF. You can control F to find particular bits of things. It shouldn't be too hard to figure out what's in the SRD and what isn't.
Cool.
With that in mind, should we start with the OGL questions, or I don't know that we need to. Do we need to introduce what the OGL and the SRD is first?
I don't think so, but just in case, for some reason, if somebody is skipping directly to this episode, and missed the one with Nolan, or I don't know, just doesn't know. The OGL is the Open Gaming License, which is the first two pages of this document, and then the rest of it is the system reference.
Or the SRD, right. And so the thing about the OGL is that it was actually created in 2000, first. And what you'll notice is that if you look at this document, it still says OGL 1.0A or
Yeah.
something like that. So it hasn't been changed since then. The only thing that has been changed are the references to the original SRD. The new SRD is SRD 5 or 5E or something like that. Yeah, the SRD 5 is what it says.
Yep.
So that's all that has actually changed, which I think is pretty interesting because some people who have been gaming for a little while will know that they didn't use the SRD with 4th edition. They used something called, I think, the GSL, and that was like a huge thing, and I don't want to get into the politics of that at all.
It was a dark time.
Yeah. Well, I'm just not going to say much more about it. I think I could get in trouble not with other lawyers, but with many of my gaming friends and possibly myself.
Is it common for licenses like these to go through more iterations? Is it strange that this is still the same license from, 16 years ago?
So the really interesting thing about it is that the OGL is the first of its kind. There aren't other licenses like it. To answer your question, Lisa, I don't know. it's totally new. There have been a few other gaming licenses that have appeared after it, but it was the first one, and so there isn't much to sort of gauge it against, in my opinion.
Okay. So if the license has kind of maintained this incarnation for 16-ish years, then I guess there's not really reason to expect it to change anytime soon, but is there any kind of protocol that you know of for kind of keeping on top of that, for knowing if it changes, other than just sort of word of mouth?
Wizards will release updates to it. They are the only people who can update the license according to the terms of the license. Mm-hmm. And what I'll say is that it's not in their best interest to not publicize when they change the license, because if they're making a material change that people need to comply with and people need to follow, they should let people know. And the second thing is that with a license like this, which nerds like me are going to go through and actually read from beginning to end, any small minute change matters. You know, people will notice. Like, I can't be the only nerd on the internet who's a lawyer and also a D&D fan. So given the number of people that will be encountering this license and trying to use it, it would be confusing to me if suddenly they added another subsection, like subsection 17, which is like, and also, you know, a Tarrasque will come to your house and eat you every Thursday, and then you'll be rezzed, and then you'll be eaten again. Like, it would just be a confusing thing to hide in the language of it. So I don't know. Yeah, stay on top of it via the Googles. Use word of mouth. I mean, gaming is a community, right? So people are going to tell other people. Like, that's one of the reasons that we're having this discussion right now, right? Is a lot of people are talking about the Open Gaming License. A lot of people will continue to talk about the Open Gaming License. And this isn't like some sort of tiny mom and pop property we're talking about here. This is Dungeons and Dragons. They're, you know,
yeah, maybe you've heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. They're the Tiamat in the room. So yeah, I don't think that there's no like subscription service or anything like that. And the terms of the license don't have anything about wizards needing or being obligated to update the people who use the license when it is updated. But to that end, it just seems unlikely that people wouldn't notice. You know what I mean? Like a lot of licenses, and I think the reason you're asking this question is because terms of use and terms of service on the internet are updated all the time, right?
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
iTunes. Like I'm sure I'm not a patent lawyer, but I'm sure there are all kinds of dirty bombs hidden in iTunes. Mm-hmm. The iTunes that like someone who's more technical than I would be a better person to sort of find those sorts of things. But with this, you know, it's two pages. I mean, you've read it. I've read it. Like it's two pages. One thing that could be interesting is if they add or subtract things from the SRD, which they're allowed to do. And so that could be something, because that is like 400 pages, right? So they, who knows, maybe they'll put beholders in, maybe they'll take like, I don't know, some other random creature that's now, are Rust monsters in there? I don't actually remember. I are a bad fan. I have not read all 400 pages of this again yet.
Me neither.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I recall there being some requests in the AMA about adding more content, or if there was going to be more SRD content release. And it sounds like maybe, but there's no solid plan.
Right.
And the answer, they were sharing anyway.
Yeah. And so the answer they always gave was like, not at this point, or we can't say, you know, but that AMA was very instructive and very interesting.
Yeah.
It also, they also had a I dug up this 2004 frequently asked questions document from the Wizards website. Mm-hmm. And because the OGL hasn't changed at all, I used that for some of my, you know, trying to figure out where their head was at when making various decisions. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can put this in the show notes, but you probably want to link to that AMA, and you'll probably want to link to, like, the 2000... I'll send you the link for this, the 2004 FAQ, and yeah.
Yep. So we will include both of those for sure. And before we jump in, the last thing that I wanted to mention was when looking at this stuff on the Wizards website, they put the OGL kind of up next to the DMs Guild a lot, and there's a nice handy little checklist as to which to use depending on what type of content you want to put out. So we're not going to be talking about the DMs Guild really today, which includes...
Well, so I wasn't sure whether we'd be talking about it today. I know that we could have another equally long discussion about it by itself. I think one thing that we might want to just mention is the fact that the DMs Guild is all new. You know, they haven't had it. They didn't have a DMs Guild in 4th or in 3.5. So that could be a totally interesting situation because it's sort of a higher level premium content. It's like a subscriber content sort of level where you can use like Forgotten Realms and some other kinds of content. And maybe if they want to add more things to the SRD, instead of putting things in the SRD, they might put it in the DM scale.
I suspect we might be seeing more of that happening. Which is interesting because then it keeps that content in a place where they can distribute
it,
monitor it better. Yeah, all under the potential
watchful eye,
the carrot on the stick of okay, maybe you'll actually be brought into the fold and you can it'll be official at some point, like if you write stuff that's good enough, kind of thing.
Yes.
So it's really interesting to see. I'm very curious to see how that unfolds.
Yeah. Well, Annatar has many tricks that he can use to seduce us all. I'm just kidding.
It's very tempting.
Yeah. Well, I like D&D. If I didn't like D&D, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I wouldn't have been playing it for the past 12 to 15 years. I also understand they're owned by Hasbro, and that has its own sort of situation.
Yeah.
But anyway, should we just jump directly into the OGL then? Does that work?
Yeah, let's do that.
So the first thing that I wanted to say about the OGL is I'm going to refer to this sort of this question from the Q&A. The 2004 one that I mentioned before. One of the questions, which I really hope this was an actual question that somebody wrote in and that they're answering, was, this license is confusing and full of legal terms I don't understand. Is there a plain English version?
That's definitely my question. So I'm sure
that.
Somebody asked.
I love the idea that somebody just raised their hand and like, said that to someone. But anyway, the answer is no, there is not. The license has been drafted with specific legal language to withstand any reasonable court challenge, which is a kind of a hilarious boast on their part. They're like, oh no, this license is amazing, y'all. You don't even know. But an effort to simplify the text might introduce errors or omissions that would distort the license and could mislead potential users. You should consult your legal counsel if you have any questions about how to use the OGL. And so that's sort of been their party line. Response, as you know, like it's just, and when somebody asks a question, including me for the record, I tweeted it, I tweeted at Chris Perkins and at Mike Merles, and I think it, I tweeted at them and asked them, like, hey, I'm a lawyer who's trying to put together maybe some basic information for people who want to know how to use the OGL. Can you give me any advice? And rather than saying consult a lawyer, which would have been a little silly to say to a lawyer, they just said nothing. So, I mean, I'm not bitter, but,
I get where they're coming from. But...
I totally understand. Yeah. But anyway, that's just some flavor, I guess, before we talk about this. So
before we attempt to translate it into plain English.
Yeah, exactly. Legal information. So, all right, kids, let's open our texts to the address given in the show notes and we'll start singing along and following along.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the part that says legal information. And so this is actually the preamble to the OGL. Interestingly, this is not part of the Open Gaming License. This is text that precedes the Open Gaming License. So you might reasonably ask, what is it exactly? So what it is an explanation of how the Open Gaming License interacts with the system reference document. So what this says is that permission to copy, modify, and distribute the files collectively known as the System Reference Document 5.0, or SRD5, and the reason they have that parenthesis and then the sort of quotation marks is that that's what makes it a defined term in a contract when you're drafting a contract. So is granted solely through the use of the Open Gaming License version 1.0a. As we said, this is still the first version that they used in 2000. So far, so good. So someone on the Reddit thread pointed out astutely that this is version 1.0a and the license hasn't changed since 2000. And we talked a little bit about what that might mean.
Mm-hmm.
The new bit that surrounds the license is the part that starts at legal information and ends with all of the rest of the SRD5 is open game content as described in section 1D of the license. So if you look at the document where it says...
So almost that whole first column.
That's the new stuff that you should be definitely looking at.
Cool.
Make sure that you don't... I mean, maybe you looked at the stuff the first go-round in 2000, but make sure you're looking at this first column and read through it, because there is some stuff in there that's important and has changed. So if you only remember one thing from the stuff I say, it's this. Make sure you have a handle on what's actually in the license, okay? So next it says that the text of the Open Gaming License itself is not open game content. Instructions on using the license are provided within the license itself. Whew, boy. Okay, so...
Yeah, that's a snake eating its own tail.
It is, and I realize how silly this sounds, but what they're essentially saying is the text of the Open Gaming License is not open game content. Open game content is stuff that they are releasing that we can modify and play with. If you could modify the Open Gaming License itself, you would be able to do all kinds of crazy stuff. This would be like 3.5's meta magic. You don't get to rewrite it to give yourself access to the whole PHB. You don't get to increase your crit range to 1 to 20. Like, you don't get to do all that stuff. This is really important to clarify, because if rules lawyers are bad, real lawyers are worse. You do not want to leave a hole in your contract that basically says... everything we put in here is open gaming content, which means you can modify it. Also, this license is open gaming content. So, I mean, you can imagine the problem that would create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's protecting against that, but also you and I are allowed to read it in verbatim on this podcast, and that's still okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Next, it says, the following items are designated product identity, as defined in Section 1E of the Open Game License version 1.0a, and are subject to the conditions set forth in Section 7 of the OGL and are not open content. Okay, so they're telling you some of the stuff that they explicitly do not include within the open game content definition.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of stuff in there that includes, sadly, Beholders, the Gizarai, Mind Flayers, Illithids, and all that sort of stuff. So what I'll say is that the SRD has a whole bunch of characters and creatures and content inside it.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to control F, and I did this, I didn't find Beholders in there. I didn't find Illithids in there.
Yep.
I think what they're doing is they're saying only the stuff that we have in here is open game content. And also, by the way, this stuff is definitely product identity.
So what's the point of having this extra information here at the beginning that says this is not allowed, this is not in the SRD, other mm-hmm. than just, instead of just leaving it out of the SRD?
So there's a few possible explanations for that. Like, I don't work for Wizards, obviously, but mm-hmm. I think that they might want to carve it out because maybe they plan on using it in the GM's Guild later and they want to maintain the difference, or maybe they'll be using it in a different license. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons, but
mm-hmm.
Also, if you look at some of that stuff, like, I know the Beholder has had litigation about it. I know Illithids have had litigation about it. Like, maybe it's just something that they want to be extra careful about, but I can't really, I don't have, like, mind read, so. But that's my theory anyway. And then it says all of the rest of the SRD5 is open game content as described in section 1D of the license. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Like, correct mm-hmm. me if I'm wrong. Okay. So now let us move directly to the OGL. And the first text in the OGL says, the following text is the property of Wizards of the Coast, Inc. and is copyright 2000 Wizards of the Coast, Inc. And then there's the defined term Wizards. Sorry, I'm just so tickled to be saying the phrase, the defined term, Wizard. All rights reserved. So this bit is interesting to me. It's saying that the text itself is the property of WotC, so they still own that text. And now, with your indulgence and permission, I'm going to explain a little bit about how property law works, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the first things they teach you in a property law class is that property rights are like a bundle of sticks. You have a bundle of sticks and they belong to you. You can break off parts of the sticks and give them to people. You can sell off the rights to do various things with the sticks, but that doesn't mean that the sticks are not your own. Does that make sense? Like, you originally still own them. Just because I'm selling you one of the sticks doesn't mean you automatically have rights to the rest of the sticks.
Oh, okay.
But let's do it better because this is, we're talking about D&D here. So let's talk about property rights as an owlbear farm. So you
Yes,
can
let's.
let's do that. You can sell an owlbear to someone, right? That might make it theirs. You're basically terminating your right of ownership in the owlbear, and then it becomes theirs. But what if you're trying to make an owlbear petting zoo and you just sell someone the right to pet the owlbear or to take a ride on the owlbear or a single owlbear feather? No one would say, oh, I have all the rights to the owlbear because I have the right to a feather from it, or I petted it once, you know? That doesn't mean you've given away the farm or even the individual owlbear. What WotC is saying here is that this owlbear belongs to us. We're going to let you do a few explicitly mentioned things with it. Anything you do with it that is outside the scope of what we said you could do is basically you running off with our owlbear, cloning it, doing all sorts of unspeakable things to it, and that is not okay. So that's kind of what all rights reserved means. It means that WotC is keeping for itself the rights to do other things with the property, including the all-important right to sue you if you make use of it in an inappropriate way according to the license. Does that make sense?
Cool. Absolutely.
Do you have any questions about that or?
I don't.
Okay,
That
cool.
makes perfect sense. Yeah, so let's find out what we're allowed to do with this owlbear.
Perfect. Okay. So the next section is definitions. It's pretty standard to have a preamble section like the first text in the OGL, and then definitions. So I'll try to hit the points that will be most confusing. Otherwise, this will be way too long, and I know we also have questions to get to too. So let's start. The first definition is contributors. That means the people giving you this license or WotC. It says people who are creating the content, essentially. I think that's pretty straightforward. Derivative material, generally speaking, derivative material is work that is derived from or includes or amends existing work. Anything you do with the SRD, for example, your own module, creating your own sort of splat book could be one example. Subsequent books published by WotC could also be another. It's important because derivative work doesn't necessarily just mean something that a fan did. It can also mean something that a company did. The original Batman comic, for example, has lots of derivative works from it and multimedia derivative works from it. Anyone can create derivative material. My Star Wars Edge of the Empire campaign is derivative material of, Star Wars properties. And so I'm going to read to you what they actually say is derivative material, if that's cool. And I have a reason for this, I promise.
No, that's cool. Go ahead.
Derivative material means copyrighted material, including derivative works and translations, parens, including into other computer languages, parens, comma, potation, modification, correction, addition, extension, upgrade, improvement, compilation, abridgment, or other form in which an existing work may be recast, transformed, or adapted. So there's something weird here. And the weird thing is the word potation. I don't know what that word means in a legal context. I Googled it. I checked my Black's Law Dictionary. I used Westlaw Next. I trawled the forums to find out what it means. I cannot find a site for what the word potation means. I know it means brewing, like a potable in a non-legal context, but I don't know what it means in this context. I spoke with some other IP lawyers who were my friends and tried to get them to see what happened, what is going on with the word potation. And candidly, it took me about as long to research the word potation as it did for me to read the whole rest of this contract. With the net result that they seem to think it's a typo and it should read quotation.
Interesting.
So, make sure you check the SRD for misplaced quotation marks. Well, so the really messed up thing is this contract is 15 years old.
Yeah, that it hasn't been pointed out or.
I was so resistant to the idea that this was like a mistake that I just kept telling my friends, no, come on, guys. Like, I've been a lawyer for 2 years. Many of you have been a lawyer for longer, and you're experts in this kind of thing. What could it possibly mean? And the answer I got back was, oops.
Or it just means Wizards does not want you to brew your SRD, I guess.
And in an IP that includes like the Artificer and Alchemy, maybe that has real meaning for
Maybe.
but. Okay,
Someone out there.
so potation is the moral of this story. Distribute means any method of showing your work to other people. I think that's pretty straightforward, unless you want me to get a little farther into that.
Nope, sounds good.
Cool. So next we have open game content, which is obviously a really big concept. It means the game mechanic and includes the methods, procedures, processes, and routines to the extent such content does not embody the product identity, sorry, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, you guys can all read this, so I'm not going to say all of it. But what one thing that's kind of interesting is that they say it means the game mechanic when mechanics aren't copyrightable. Like, that's the basic thing that any – one of the basic things that any student of copyright law knows is that I'm going to read from the Copyright Act of 17 U.S.C. Section 102B for you lawyers out there. In no case does copyright protection for an original work of authorship extend to any idea, procedure, process, system, method of operation, concept, principle, or discovery, regardless of the form in which it is described, explained, illustrated, or embodied in such work. So, I mean, yes, thank you, Wizards, for giving us the permission to publish mechanics. You're too kind. I could easily derail this whole session by talking about how there are vast swaths of the SRD that are mechanics that are probably already available to the general public, but that feels a little soapboxy, and, you know, it's less black and white, and that could get me into trouble and confuse people. You know, it's probably easier for people to use what's in the SRD, you know, and not think too hard about the underlying legal issues, because that's what lawyers are for.
Yeah.
So basically what they're saying here is that the open game content is the stuff that you're allowed to publish. As I said, they also said you're allowed to publish mechanics, but whatever.
But you were anyway.
They're drawing a distinction between this open game content and product identity. Product identity is the stuff that they want to keep and don't want to give you any rights in at all. So the next defined term is product identity, and I'm not going to list everything, but there's a few cherry-picked things that I noted that might be helpful. One thing is that the names of the products and the lines, like their Tyranny of Dragons. Well, that sounds like a George R. R. Martin situation, but, Tyranny of Dragons are PI, logos and identifying marks. So the D&D logo with the dragon sort of ampersand curled around it, that's a logo. That could be product identity. And okay, when I was reviewing the potation issue, I noted that there was a typo here. It says, including trade dress, semicolon, artifacts, semicolon, creatures, space, characters, semicolon.
Yeah.
That's a mistake.
Okay, I wondered about that too.
As far as I can tell, it's just a cold mistake. Like, maybe it softens the potation blow a little, but I shouldn't make too much fun of them. Like, I'm a contract lawyer too. People make mistakes. But anyway, basically, don't copy the pictures that you see associated with the stuff in the SRD. You could get into trouble for that. I mean, parts of the rogue class might be SRD, but that doesn't mean if there's a part of the rogue class that is the SRD, that doesn't mean you can go to the page that the core rulebook has that same text and then copy the picture that you see there. Like, I just want to emphasize that. Like, that's not, they're saying you can't do that.
Okay. So I know, of course, after I said we weren't going to talk about the DM's Guild, I know part of the deal with the DM's Guild is there are artworks and pieces of design that you can use in the things that you're going to publish on the DM's Guild. And so there's nothing like that for the OGL, correct? Like, nothing that I've seen.
If there's nothing in the SRD that's a picture, you can't use it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So just what's in this document. Otherwise, it's up to you to create your own nice designs to go along with things. Cool.
And I say the reason I said if it's in this document is because, you know, you and I haven't looked through the whole
thing. Yeah. Maybe I think there's a couple.
There may be some Eldritch symbols in there that we had not yet uncovered. But okay, so finally, they say in the definition of product identity, anything designated product identity by the owner of the product identity is product identity. That they're making the license, so they make the rules. That's what that clause is, basically. They also say that trademarks are product identity. And not to go down a Bulette hole here, but trademarks are the things that WotC uses to distinguish itself in the marketplace. Like I said, there's that logo or a slogan, et cetera, something like that. If you're curious, you can go onto the U.S. Patent and Trademarks website and search for what trademarks WotC has. They have a trademark on the phrase Dungeons and Dragons, as you might expect. I like just verified that 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then finally, use means what you'd be doing with this license, republishing it, distributing it, you know, printing it, and all that stuff. Make sense?
Yep.
Cool. Perfect. So section one, which is like just an epic tier section, is all definitions. And then there are lots of smaller sections, which basically say much smaller things. Section two says that you have to affix a notice to the things that you publish and that you cannot change this notice in any way. The notice is in, I believe it's section 15, which is at the end. And it's the thing that says copyright notice. Section 3 basically says that in using this open game content, you are tacitly agreeing to the terms of this license. Section 3 is called the offer and acceptance. It says, by using the open game content, you indicate your acceptance of the terms of this license. Pretty straightforward. Section 4 says that WotC, in exchange for your use of this license, will give you a perpetual, worldwide, royalty-free, non-exclusive license. Perpetual means you can continue to use it indefinitely. Worldwide means worldwide. Yeah. Royalty fee means you won't be required to pay any fees to WotC as long as you abide by the terms of the license. And non-exclusive means other people get to use it too.
Cool.
You cannot break into someone's house and say, you're using the open gaming license too. Just, you know, don't, like, other people can use it too. That's why it's open.
Okay. Is it perpetual unless and until there is a new version of this license, or is it just always perpetual?
I'm actually not sure. That's a really good question. I know that they have the right to update it however they want. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not sure how that particular battle would play out. So, yeah.
Okay. I think there is a further section that actually talks about versions a little bit.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually say whether or not they can revoke the perpetuity of it.
Gotcha.
I don't think, but we'll move on to that. My old contracts professor would probably have a field day with, like, whether this is consideration or not. Consideration is a concept in contracts where, like, in order to get something, you have to exchange something of value. And so what they're saying here is, you are allowed to use this license, and in exchange, we'll give you this license.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, at least to my reading of it. But, you know, maybe that's something that's more commonplace than I'm aware of. Section 5 says that in contributing original material as open game content, you are representing that this is your original creation, and you have the rights to grant the rights to convey this license. So if I make Han Solo part of the module I write using the open game content, that's precisely what Section 5 is getting at. Like, don't use other copyrighted characters and other copyrighted content as part of the open game content. It's basically just, guys, we're trying to do this thing, guys. Don't do that. Don't do that thing. I mean, yeah, it seems pretty straightforward to my reading, but. Section 6 is about notice again. It basically says you need to include that bit of text at the end to anything you publish under the OGC. Section 7 says you can't use product identity, including as an indication to compatibility. And I sort of went back and forth on how I should really talk about this, because like I said, mechanics aren't copyrightable. What I think they're trying to get at here is that they want to avoid people creating new subclasses and just saying, okay, I'm creating the Blackguard subclass, and or my own new class, and it uses the following PHB1 Paladin Avenger powers. You know, they don't want you to explicitly say this is compatible with the PHB, all the other products that they have there. They're just trying to avoid that. They're also leaving themselves wiggle room by saying they can make an independent contract with you to use this product identity, but nothing under the terms of the license says that you can dig into product identity. Section 8 says that if you're going to use the open gaming content, you must indicate which portions of the work you're using is open gaming content. I mean, that's just sensible, right? If you're letting people use this stuff, Wizards just wants you to use some way of separating it from your content.
From the stuff you wrote. Okay, yeah.
So in 2004, WotC wrote about this on their website, and I'll quote from that. The answer is, this clause means that the publisher has a burden to use some system to identify open game content to any recipient of that content. Systems which have been used by some publishers include placing open game content in shading boxes using a different font, italicizing or bolding the open game content, and segregating all the open game content into specially designed chapters or appendices. Some publishers have released documents that are identified as being comprised completely of open game content. So, and then they go on to say, clearly identified means the system should pass the reasonable person test, meaning that a reasonable person should be able to determine what portions of a given work are open game content and which portions are not. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Section 9 says that only WotC may update versions of the license. I know we talked about this earlier. Did you want to talk about this a little more in depth? Or
I think maybe this was what I was thinking was coming up.
Mm-hmm. Wizards or its designated agents may publish updated versions of this license. You may use any authorized version of this license to copy, modify, and distribute any open game content originally distributed under any version of this license.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like they're saying, okay, we may update this to version 2, but both versions are still valid?
Yep, that's absolutely what they're saying.
So how does that work? If they decide to add something or to remove something...
Under Section 9... If your open game content was originally distributed under a previous version of the license, you can keep using that previous version.
Okay. And then if they were to update it to version 2, anything that I publish in future should be using version 2?
Well, it's saying that you may use any authorized version of this license to copy, modify, and distribute any open game content originally distributed under any version of this license. I read that to mean if it was originally distributed under version 1,
mm-hmm.
be okay.
Right. But then if I wrote something new, could I still use version 1 of that license?
Well, so it says originally distributed under any version of the license.
I see.
So if it's under any version of the license, version 1 was a version, and it was originally distributed under version 1, so you can keep doing it under version 1, is my reading of it, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got you. Yeah.
Because their previous version, let's say version 1, which is a previous authorized version, and you originally distributed under that, and then there's versions 2 through 5, it says you may use any authorized version, so version 1, of this license to copy, modify, and distribute any open game content originally distributed under any version of this license.
Cool.
It's an interesting question about whether or not if something was originally distributed under version 3, you could use it under version 1. I honestly don't know.
A bridge will cross maybe if they ever update this.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that's why they didn't. Use of contributor credits. You may not market or advertise the open game content using the name of any contributor unless you have written permission from the contributor to do so. So, you know, don't just release your thing and then say, oh, by the way, Ed Greenwood is totally all over this. Or like, you know, the designers of 5th edition are involved in creating what I created. And we're all bros. I'm pretty sure that's what Section 11 is saying.
Okay, and I think we skipped 10.
Oh, we did? Did we?
Mm-hmm.
10, copy.
Must include a copy of this license.
Oh, yeah.
So is that this whole two pages here, or is that where it begins with open game license version?
Yeah, the whole two pages.
Okay, cool.
Let's see. Use of contributor credits. Oh, that was the thing where you can't publicize using the name of the contributors. Inability to comply. If it is impossible for you to comply with any of the terms of this license with respect to some or all of the open game content, you may not use any open game material so affected. Does that make sense, or is that something that needs clarification?
If you mess up a little bit, you can't play with any of our toys.
Well, it might not even be you messing up. Let's say that there's a statute or judicial order, like a court decision or government regulation, then you're still out of luck. It might not be you, yeah.
Oh. Is there anything that you can think of that would do something like that?
Let's say that the copyright, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office issues new regulations for copyright, and what the SRD and the OGL, what was originally the SRD and the OGL can no longer exist under new copyright law.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be one situation. But the provision of this contract that's aimed at like you doing like chaotic evil things is termination.
Yeah.
That's the one that says the license will terminate automatically if you fail to comply with all terms herein and fail to cure such breach within 30 days of becoming aware of the breach. All sublicenses shall survive the termination of this license. Sublicenses are smaller licenses that might be related to this particular license.
Okay.
They're just saying those would be, like, let's say they have another deal with you related to this license and you screw up the larger license. The sublicense might still apply.
Okay.
Reformation. If any provision of this license is held to be unenforceable, such provision shall be reformed only to the extent necessary to make it enforceable. Okay, this is a little tricky, but essentially what they're saying here is if some portion of this license is held not enforceable in court, they're only going to change that portion of the license to the extent it will become enforceable and not like in any other crazy way. It's hard for me to sort of come up with an example for this, but hopefully that's clear on its face. I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if it's remained unchanged for this long, then.
Yeah. I can't say what the always in motion is the future, but I don't see why. Yeah. And especially after it's just been published again. Okay. So then there's the copyright notice, which is the open game license version 1.0A, again, copyright 2000. And then you have to say system reference document 5.0, copyright 2016, which is the COAST. And then they list a bunch of wizards. And then that's the end of the license.
And that's it.
Yep, that is it.
And then you get to go read about character stats and spells you're allowed to talk about and all the fun stuff.
Go play in Mordenkainen's magical sandbox.
Yeah.
I hope that wasn't too confusing or...
No, I think that was perfect.
Okay, great. Do you want to talk about the questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did get some listener questions over Twitter and Reddit. And again, you know, these, we're talking about these in hypotheticals as best that we can here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with the question from Rich Howard.
Okay. Who's
Umbra Walker on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Nice friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like to know, if a spell's name isn't listed in the SRD, may I use the name of it in a new class spell list as long as I don't include mechanics about that spell? So my assumption is that something generic like power word heal shouldn't be a problem, as players will need to reference core books for mechanics. So he just wants to name these things that don't exist in the SRD. He's not going to give any information about them, you know, directing players back to these core books. So is he allowed to do that?
Okay, so let me give you a kind of long rambling answer,
yeah,
with the understanding that this isn't legal advice. one thing to keep in mind is that game mechanics are not copyrightable. As we've said before, you can go to the link we'll provide in the show notes to copyright.gov to find out more about it. So in the most basic sense, WotC has rights to the IP or intellectual property that is Dungeons & Dragons, but they do not and cannot have a copyright on the idea of, say, rolling dice. They don't have a copyright on the idea of adventuring and slaying monsters. They may have a copyright in the words cure light wounds, as in the name of that spell, but they can't copyright the idea of casting a spell to heal. What that means is that while Tasha's Hideous Laughter, the name of one spell, may be copyrighted, the idea of casting a spell isn't. If you want to use something like power word heal, one option is to make up your own name and mechanics for it. So that's one direction you could go, even though it's not in the SRD, just make up your own heal spell. But let's say you're nine hells bent on using a particular spell. In the past, I know that authors used oblique ways to reference particular spells that weren't covered in the SRD. They'd reference a particular page of the PHB, but that kind of seems to be crossing a line, as Section 7 says you can't indicate compatibility with other products, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd make up hilarious analogs like Dasha's unpleasant chuckle. and I know I've seen this stuff in OGL content before, or, you know, open gaming license content before, and mm-hmm. I don't know what WotC's lawyers think of that. But fast forward to right now, and I'm going to quote from Mike Merles on the Reddit AMA. Somebody asked a question about the fact that the fighter uses the champion archetype, but does not use the battlemaster, which means it's not possible to be making new maneuvers or classes that use superiority dice, like the cavalier and the scout, both of which use superiority dice.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be possible to get the text of the superiority dice mechanic and one maneuver added to the SRD? And I'm paraphrasing here, that's not literally what the guy said, but
yeah.
Mike Merles' answer was, sorry, that's not in the plans right now. So from WotC's perspective, we have to assume that they included some spells and left other spells out for reasons. This has a lot to do with the DM's Guild, which we've sort of covered a little bit. Unlike the last go-round, there is an alternate forum where you can use more copyrighted D&D material, the DM's Guild. So if you're absolutely hell-bent on using material that matches closely to IP from the Forgotten Realms, for example, you might want to think long and hard about whether the DM's Guild is a right fit for you. And additionally, one more thing I'd say is that during the last go-round, the SRD applied to the whole core rulebook. It was even longer than it is right now, I think. And that's not the case here. So I can't tell you for sure whether you'll be okay with the generic reference to power word heal, because I'm not 100% certain whether the phrase power word heal counts as D&D product identity or whether it would be considered generic game mechanics. You know, the idea that you can heal someone more than you would with a more powerful version of the spell.
Mm-hmm.
What I do know is that it wasn't included in the SRD, and there's a reason they've carved out some areas and some spells for use and not others. Ultimately, the risk is up to you, but you have a few options, and I would say a relatively safe thing is like making up a generic spell that heals, because that's, to me, hews closer to the idea of mechanics. So yeah, that's what I would say about that.
Okay, so would that then, going back to the OGL, this first column bit where they're kind of marking out what is not open gaming content. There mm-hmm. is in this list here, Forgotten Realms, mm-hmm. Faerun, proper names, including those used in names of spells or items.
So right, exactly.
Would Power Word Heal fall under that?
I mean, if Power Word Heal is the name of that particular spell in the next handbook, which I like, confidentially, mm-hmm. I play mundane characters, so I'm not the best guy to ask about
yeah.
stuff. If Power Word Heal is the proper name for that spell in the core rulebook, and it's not in the SRD, I think you pretty much have your answer.
Okay. Cool. So what if we were talking about mechanics not being copywritten and things like that? If he were to call it something else that sort of alludes to, I'm having trouble coming up with a fake version of Power Word Heal, but using basically having the same mechanical effects,
Yeah,
is he asking for trouble?
Dasha's uncomfortable chuckle.
Exactly.
Version.
If he calls it that and uses the same mechanical effects, is he asking for trouble or is that kind of okay?
I really can't say. That's a WotC question. What I can tell you is sort of the rules that they've put out there, and the rules that they put out there say there are some spells that we have not included. These are the spells you can use, and then they don't say anything else.
Okay, cool. Don't get in trouble, Rich. We like you.
Yes, please don't get in trouble, Rich. Hopefully that will help you not get in trouble.
I hope so.
So yeah, is that cool? Should we move on to the next question? Or,
Yeah, I think
I'm
so. I
sorry.
think
I'm
that
sorry.
works.
I can't answer more directly. It's honestly, it's a gray. It's a confusing area.
Okay, I think this is probably from Reddit. Mac2028 wants to know. Oh yeah, he's from Reddit.
You can
Can
tell
I
because it
write?
says zero children next to his name.
But can I write a warlord class?
It really does. Sorry. I was just mocking you, Mac 2028. You may have children in the real world. Anyway, sorry.
I'm sure you're a delightful person. And your question. Can I write a warlord class for standard 5th edition D&D because they said they were not going to do it?
Okay. First, as I've written here, I love warlords. I want that on the record. I can't say that enough. Warlords are basically lawyers. They're like my dream class. So in a word, yes, you can make a warlord class. There is nothing currently, I believe, in the PHB that uses the term warlord. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it called like the battle master is the one with superiority dice anyway?
I'm gonna go say sure, probably.
That's my belief. My belief is that the
have
battle
I
master
don't
is.
have that version of the book.
Oh, okay. Well, so as I said, mechanics are not copyrightable, so feel free to make up your own. Just be careful about avoiding the use of any content that's not in the SRD if you plan on making the use of the Open Gaming License. So if you're going to refer to things, make sure you're not referring to non-SRD content. If you want to make up something that is like you can add do different kinds of maneuvers or something like that, make sure you're not calling them what they're called in the core rule book. You know, don't just call it superiority dice. Like I know mechanics are not copyrightable, but the name and the term for that particular type of it's not a spell. God, move? Do we want to say move? Is that a good way to put it?
Move or action, something
Move or
like that?
action? Yeah, those things are probably product identity. So
Yeah, that definitely sounds like they have capital letters
yeah,
and are
cool.
proper names for things.
And if it's confusing and you get pretty far along in this process, you might want to consult a lawyer about it. But
Cool. Then we have another Reddit, Yadella. I'm going to assume that's how that's pronounced. Any legal horror stories about 5th edition OGL where someone did something illegal and tried to use it as defense?
Oh, I love this question. And I don't know how to answer it because I'm not on WotC's legal team. But I'll say this. If you find out more about this, please tell me. I really want to know. I want to know these stories, and I want to use them in an adventure module so that I can get as meta as possible. Like, I want to hear a story about someone who did something horrible in court trying to use the 5th edition OGL, and then I want to turn that into like a courtroom module and then publish that under the
Ooh.
OGL just to see what would happen. So come at me, basically, is what I'm saying here. Oh, that would be so,
Perfect.
I wish I knew. I wish I knew.
Oh, there's got to be something good.
I know, but I feel like it's very much inside baseball on WotC's part. And it's like talking about weird things people have tried with your company identity is probably the nightmare from WotC's legal counsel's perspective. Like I can imagine few things that are worse. So yeah. Gosh, you know what? I hope you find out. I hope you find out and you tell people because that's awesome.
Yeah, if anybody knows anything, send us an email.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So this next question was a series of tweets from Arthan SEO, and I'm going to try to parse it together into one more or less coherent question.
Okay.
I would like to know, even with unique added content to the SRD, could I divide the SRD content into three books? If my three books all contain unique content and different names, but the SRD division is the same as Dungeons and Dragons, name summary is in parentheses here. Or, sorry, same summary in parentheses. So one player-related book, same SRD parts as the player's handbook. One DM-related book, same SRD parts as Dungeon Master's Guide. And one monsters-related book.
I assume he's referring to like the Monster Manual there.
Yeah, that's what I imagine as well. Could it be considered as trademark slash trade dress, product identity violation? So from what I'm gathering, they would like to publish their content not as one package, I guess, but split it up across three different pieces that people can buy.
Let me address that part of the question first.
Cool.
The splitting up part of it, if that's cool. You can split it up however you want. Some people have published the entire SRD again, and that's fine. Some people have taken parts of the SRD, and that's fine. As long as you comply with the terms of the license, i.e. you have notice in there, the notice provision in there, and then whatever else is in the license that you have to do every time you publish something else, you're okay. All right, so let's move on to the next part then.
Which seems like, so whatever it is that they're hoping to publish is maybe so big that they want to divide it up into sections. So here's the monster section of this module or adventure that I'm setting up. Mm-hmm. And here's the player information section of this module slash adventure, and so on and so forth. So is that...
Okay, so and the last thing he asks is whether it's trademark slash trade dress slash product identity violation. I am not going to address that part of it because there's a lot of concepts in there and I can't predict what WotC will do. But what I will say is that don't call it the PHV, don't call it the Monster Manual, don't call it the Dungeon Master's Guide, because as we talked about before, the names of these particular books are also trademarked, and you're not supposed to make reference to compatibility, or you're also not supposed to use something in a way that could be confusing about whether or not it actually came from Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
So putting out a book with the exact same title as a Wizards book, I think would be a pretty no-brainer, like, thing that you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have it like a creature codex. You can have that.
Yeah. I mean, look, they put out like mazes and monsters and all that other stuff. Like, you know, sure, keep it alliterative. Just don't call it the same thing. And make sure you're not using stuff from the SRD that you're not allowed to use.
Awesome.
What about you? What are your questions?
I guess I do have a question that may be obvious, but I think what was throwing me was there's a lot of talk about the DMs Guild and how exactly they're handling artwork.
Mm-hmm.
As far as it fits in the license, who can use what and who can reuse what. So I guess staying out of that, since the last I checked on it, that was sort of in flux. They're looking at those licenses or those rules again. At least that's where they left off in the AMA. Under the OGL, if I'm putting out my own content and I'm creating my own artwork to go with it, do I still own that? Like,
oh, that's such... I'm so glad you asked this. And I can't believe I forgot to mention this. Anything that you publish under the OGL... that's not SRD that you created, it's still yours.
Cool.
And that might be the first thing we should say. I even flagged that particular like point and was going to say that like first, and then I just totally forgot. That's so important. And it's for people who are thinking about using the OGL and want to know what their rights are. Yeah, publishing stuff alongside things from the SRD doesn't mean that those things that are not part of the SRD become Wizards property.
Cool.
Which isn't the case with the DMs Guild. Incidentally.
Yeah, it's the opposite there.
Yeah, they kind of left that open about what might happen. I'm actually not totally sure how the DMs Guild works legally, because I don't think there's a document for it necessarily, or if there's one, I haven't downloaded it yet.
Yeah, I was looking into that too. I don't think they have a document as concise anyway as the OGL is, and I think that's partly because they're constantly reworking it. Since it launched, you know, getting feedback from the people who are using it, especially about things like artwork, what are people allowed to repurpose? So I don't know if they've really hit on exactly what's going on there yet.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, it's totally new, right? So maybe they're still figuring their stuff out for that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say something real quick about are we going to do the where you can find me?
Absolutely, yes. So where can people find you online?
Okay. I can be found on Twitter. Candidly, I didn't really use my Twitter account until I met like James and Kat, because it's their primary method of communication, near as I can tell. And now I found a bunch of my other friends are on Twitter now, and we use it a lot. But anyway, I'm at RogueTLDR, so RogueTLDR, so like Rogue Too Long Didn't Read. And so that's where I am on Twitter. And then I'm also actually doing a podcast with James, Kat, and Johnny called... Never Tell Me the Pods. It's sort of a like goofy hangout Star Wars podcast where we just talk about really silly Star Wars things.
Yay.
So you can just find us on iTunes, and then just Google us, and I think we'll show up on Libsyn or whatever. But yeah.
Cool.
Oh, and read the asking questions to me on Twitter, legal questions. I don't actually know if that's such a good idea. Like I wouldn't feel comfortable answering. Like Twitter is 144 characters, so like how do I even? Yeah, so just don't do that. Please don't ask me legal questions on Twitter. I'm happy to come back if like people want to know more stuff and if you want to have me again, but like, yeah, not Twitter.
Absolutely.
Twitter's not no go for legal advice. That's probably the worst place to give legal
Yeah,
advice, actually.
absolutely. If cool. If this has opened up anybody to, oh, I now that I understand this better, now I have this question. Absolutely send them in. We will always take those questions. And if we have enough for to warrant another spot, we will totally do that.
Awesome. And yeah, again, can't emphasize enough, make sure you read what's in the SRD and in the OGL before you do stuff. That's the easiest way to avoid trouble. Oh, and if you want to ask me Star Wars questions, I am always 100% available to answer those.
Well, thank you so much for going through this with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I actually had a great time doing it. I have never published any modules or anything in my life either, so it was super interesting to see what the new approach was. And I didn't really interact with the Open Gaming License in 2000, when 3.5 first came out, because I was 12. So
Oh.
yeah, no, this is great. Thank you so much for having me. And
My
yeah.
pleasure. Huge thanks again for Pranks. For coming on and talking about all of this messy legal stuff with me and trying to wade through your questions as best we can. You can find him on Twitter at RogueTLDR. And if you're a fan of the One Shot Network, you may have seen he's got his own podcast now with network members James and Kat and Johnny O'Mara. It's called Never Tell Me the Pods, and it's all about Star Wars. It's a fantastic podcast. As somebody who knows next to nothing about Star Wars, I love it and I look forward to it, and it is a great time. Pranks has also offered to come back and talk to us again sometime if enough of you have more follow-up questions. I know we've already gotten one or two, so don't hesitate to keep sending those our way in the email modifierpodcast@gmail.com or on the Reddit or wherever you want to do that. We'll definitely have him back when we've got some more questions to dig into. Modifier is part of the One Shot Podcast Network, something I happily share with you at the end of every episode. I'm proud and amazed every time I say it, and the thing that makes the experience so completely excellent are you guys, the listeners and supporters of the network. In fact, so many of you are both listener and supporter that the Patreon for the network reached yet another goal this week. And this one includes me. Sometime right around now-ish, there should be an episode of Second Watch waiting to grace your podcatcher of choice. This is a loving goof on James and Kat's First Watch, wherein Alex Roberts, Jim McClure, and myself get giggly together to let you know a little bit more about who we are, and some of our thoughts about gaming and trash television and mangoes. Thanks for helping make this happen. You can find Modifier on Twitter at Modifier Podcast or check out the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. Feel free to reach out over email with questions, comments, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. Modifier is proud to be part of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of RPG podcasts that includes shows like First Watch. James D'Amato and Kat Cool take the First Watch and chat about what's been going on with them lately and the thoughts and feels they've been having about games. It's a fireside chat with a definite chance of a random encounter. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Next week on Modifier, Anna Kreider talks about meta-modifying magical girls and her newest game, The Watch. See you then!